Gomberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the court. I represent Barry Gomberg. We represent Ms. Starchuk. Your Honors, I'd like to focus, if I may, primarily on the issue of retaliatory discharge. As you probably know, Ms. Starchuk complained that she was being asked to teach Chicago Public School a group of students to which she was not qualified to teach.
Now, she had an ESL certificate.
Yes, Your Honor.
So in what sense was she not qualified?
Because these students were almost exclusively Spanish-speaking and Spanish-reading.
And the school gave her an assistant, right, who was fluent in Spanish.
The assistant was not of any help. And that came out in...
gave her the assistant in case she needed to communicate. I thought ESL was the sort of thing you had certain techniques and you... I mean, there are some schools where there are tens, if not, you know, scores of languages spoken.
You
have a teacher who's fluent in every one of them.
Well, you're right to some degree, Your Honor. And that was the subject of a number of depositions. The students in this class, 206... were called ESL-1, and that is different than what Your Honor is referring to. These students could not speak anything other than Spanish, could not read anything other than Spanish. And the main point there, Your Honor, is Ms. Starchuk didn't speak or write Spanish either.
But could I ask you, you're focusing on retaliatory discharge, right? Are you focusing on your state law claim, or are you focusing on... an allegation that this was for exercise of First Amendment rights?
The state law claim.
All right. Now, here the first problem I have is that she wasn't discharged. Her employment contract was not renewed. And Illinois draws a distinction between those situations.
It came out in testimony that the funds were there. It was strictly discretionary with Ms. Acevedo, the principal. She could have renewed.
But that's still not a discharge. It's a non-renewal of a contract that expired according to its own terms. I mean, they could have fired her halfway through the year, and that would have been a discharge sometime inside the term of the contract. But in her case, as I understand the facts, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the contract came to an end and they simply did not renew it. Whether or not they had funds, another may not matter. They just didn't renew it.
Well, it was tantamount to discharge because of...
Does Illinois treat these things as tantamount to discharge? Because I thought cases like the Bahalo case suggest that the tort of retaliatory discharge does not apply to non-renewal of a fixed-term employment contract.
Well, we are taking the position, Your Honor, that this court has the ability to interpret the Illinois law in a way that would indicate that it is tantamount to discharge.
We can't change Illinois law. I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, if in fact the contract was not renewed, as we claim, because of the retaliation, it was tantamount.
Are you claiming this a violation of the No Child Left Behind Act?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, that's not recognizable under Illinois law, I don't think.
Well, we don't have to apply Illinois law here. We could apply, for example, the Brandon case that I believe Justice Wood was involved with and apply the...
Judge Wood, please.
I'm sorry. Judge Wood. And therefore, you can apply the federal law here, and as you don't have to apply state law.
Well, I don't care whether you call it federal law or state law, but it's not the kind of law that...
That's right.
Illinois recognizes. I don't believe, is it?
Right. There's one thing is the source of law, but the other, as Judge Cuddy is saying, is the kind of law, and violating No Child Left Behind is quite different from violating laws about fraud and, you know, whistleblowing or other kinds of topics.
I agree, Your Honor, but that does not, I don't believe, prevent this court from taking the position that if it hasn't been done before, it can't be done now.
Why do you think we can do that without certifying? I mean, we have an Illinois case that says the tort of retaliatory discharge doesn't apply to non-renewal of fixed-term employment contracts, and the various criteria that Illinois has recognized don't seem to be here. It's a narrow tort. The Illinois courts have said that.
Well, because I think, Your Honor, the tort in this case involved the education of students, which I think there may not be an exact case on point, but the point that I would like to make is that it is time for the courts to recognize that students and teachers have rights that relate to the quality of their education. In this case,
how can we intervene and decide whether this is a matter of quality of education? I mean, it's just a disagreement between her and her supervisor, isn't it, about whether she's in accord with the proper quality of education?
If I may,
you're asking us to make a judgment on that score.
If I may address that, Your Honor. If may I address that, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Okay.
The record is
complete in that Ms. Acevedo, the principal, admits that these threats to go outside the school system and within the school system were made by Ms. Darchek. The threats to say that the students are not getting proper education and she wasn't qualified to teach these particular students. So it wasn't just a friendly discussion or friendly disagreement. She was actually saying, you're violating the law, and if you don't fix it, I'm going to go beyond you and complain, which she in fact did. Shortly thereafter, the proximity in time is very telling. She gets, Ms. Darchek gets disciplinary notices. She gets threatened, and ultimately our position is she is non-renewed or, in fact, terminated. So it is, in fact, a complaint about a violation of a federal statute, but also state statutes that relate to the quality of the education the students were getting. She was not qualified to teach the class. One might argue, where do you draw the line? You know, perhaps she was qualified or perhaps she wasn't. That's a material issue of fact. The lower court decided.
Do you think we ought to decide that?
No, I think the jury should decide that.
That's even worse in a way. I mean, the problem is you're drawing these links, and maybe they were there, but if she doesn't have any right to begin with, not to be disciplined, say, for expressing her opinion that she's not a good enough teacher to teach ESL to this particular group of students, there's no legal claim.
I do believe she had the ability to be, the contract would have been renewed if it wasn't for the retaliation. That's the basis of our claim, which is tantamount to termination.
Are you going to pursue this national origin claim?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'd like to hear what you have to say about that, too.
Okay. Well, as we say in our brief, the principal made remarks about Ms. Darchek being Polish.
On two occasions.
At least on two occasions. And referred to the students, the Polish students, as not deserving the education that the Hispanic students. So we interpret that as remarks against Polish individuals. So we believe that, at least in part, the principal, who was Ms. Acevedo, Hispanic, was motivated not to have Ms. Darchek continue in her job and continued to try to harass her and created a hostile work environment.
Now, the district court said you didn't provide causal evidence showing the causal relationship between those remarks and the decision not to renew. What do you say to that?
Well, we believe that when Ms. Acevedo made those remarks, she clearly did make the connection. One could say that's a question for the jury, whether she made the remarks or not. But once she called Ms. Darchek a stupid Polack, for example, and later, shortly thereafter, disciplines her, creates an environment that Ms. Darchek wound up in the psychiatric ward about and doesn't renew her contract, I think the connection is there.
But
now,
the
government suggests that you waive this, that you, by by not really addressing it in your brief. Did you address this point in your brief?
I believe we addressed it, Your Honor, to say that the motivation is and the connection is made by the statements themselves. That's what we were pointing out in the brief.
Thank you.
Okay, if you want to save a little bit of time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Lauber?
Good morning. Under the retaliatory discharge claim, I think what this court is obligated to do is decide what the Illinois Supreme Court would do if it were faced with this question. There are two lower court cases, Bahalo and Crum, and both of them say that retaliatory failure to renew a contract is not retaliatory discharge. So we're asking you to affirm the district court's decision that they're to award a summary judgment on that basis, that this was not retaliatory discharge. We didn't renew her contract because she cost $80,000 a year and there were only $300,000 worth of discretionary funds at the school. Now, it's apparent that Ms. Darchak didn't want to teach Hispanic students. She felt better qualified to teach the Polish students, but the problem was in 2005 we weren't getting a lot of Polish immigrants. Probably the Polish immigrants were staying in the European Union closer to home where they could find good jobs. So then as now, we're receiving a lot of Hispanic immigrants from Mexico and Central America. And that's why when Ms. Darchak applied for a job with Ms. Acevedo, she emphasized that she was learning Spanish. She said that she had taught Spanish-speaking parents both English as a second language and GED classes, and she also said that she recently taught or tutored children from Latin America.
Now, the school population was, what, about 70 or 80% Hispanic?
It was 77% Hispanic, 6% Polish. And that decreased. Actually, it was that when she began in November of 2005, there were 11 Polish students, but 2 months later, there were only four. Now, when she was assigned to room 206 in March 1st of 2006, there were only four Polish students in the entire school, and two of those students were in room 206. So it's obviously not a Hispanic bilingual or Spanish bilingual class. Why would there be two Polish-speaking students there if it were? So I want to just move to the third point, which is the Title VII claim.
The national origin discrimination claim.
Her ethnic discrimination claim.
Right.
These were not close in time. She says that Ms. Acevedo's...
Well, now, there's a problem with that here, it seems to me, because her contract didn't expire until the spring, so that she couldn't very well be non-renewed until you got to the spring, right?
Right.
The fact that there's some time lapse is almost a product of the situation rather than anything else.
But also, she didn't say, I want to fire you because you're Polish. And that's what the cases that have found that sort of causal connection show.
Well, she said something pretty close to that, didn't she?
No, Your Honor. Hispanic
students are better than Polish and deserve more than Polish people. And if you don't want to do whatever I tell you to do, you can leave my school. Sounds like she's getting ready to fire me.
Well, she could have sought to fire her before the end of the contract term, and that's actually what happened when Ms. Darchak basically refused to teach the class. She began the proceedings to fire her. So she could have done that at the time. She could have done that trying to do that in September or in November when allegedly she called her a dumb Polak. But she didn't do that. And in fact, even after the non-renewal, when she was trying to...
That's not the case before us.
The case before us is
that she didn't renew the contract. So
right, but you're saying
look at it in that context, and I'm just wondering whether the time lapse is dictated by the circumstances here, or it wouldn't be in some other case.
Well, I think that she could have
made some pretty strong statements when she made the statement.
Well, what's interesting about that is Ms. Darchak never raised that until she filed this suit. She made numerous complaints to her supervisor and to Ms. Acevedo's supervisor, and she never said anything about these remarks, which seems strange.
Well, I want to go to the two processes that you described in your brief. You say that there was first Acevedo's recommendation not to renew, made prior to March 17, 2006. Second, March 23, 2006, is when the second process is initiated, where there's an investigatory conference.
Right. That's a disciplinary. I think she was, Ms. Acevedo was very frustrated because Ms. Darchek was absent 5 days in the first 2 weeks in March, and she wasn't there, and she'd filed more than 50 complaints about the kids' behavior. So she was seeking to discipline her at that point. So she'd already decided not to renew her for the following year, but she still had her for March, April, May, and June, part of June. So she was trying to discipline her to get her to improve her behavior, to come to school and to teach the kids. So those were the two separate processes.
So at the end of this disciplinary, I want to know, at the end of which process is it that the labor relations director for the school district writes her that her employment at Princeton was terminated as of June 1, 2006, but advised her that she could apply for positions in other Chicago public schools. That's what you say.
That was the second process.
That's the
disciplinary process. And the labor relations director said that she never gave that recommendation to the board, and the board didn't act on it. And that's why Ms. Darchek could apply for disability on June 22nd. If she weren't still teaching, or if she weren't still a board employee on June 22nd, if she actually had been discharged on June 1st, she couldn't have applied for disability and received a disability through April of 07.
Now, Judge Gettleman relied in part upon this apparent, she didn't bring up these ethnic comments until later. Now, is that a credibility determination that he's making there?
I think that's a...
This is summary judgment.
It was an affirmative defense. We have in place an employment discrimination policy that allows her to make those complaints to someone, and she didn't choose to do it. She made plenty of complaints, both to her supervisor and to Ms. Acevedo's supervisor, but she never raised these alleged remarks until she filed suit.
Now, has she conceded that timing? Or is it subject, are there documents showing the things she was complaining about, and thus you can draw a negative inference that she wasn't complaining about this other?
Oh, yes, absolutely. She made numerous complaints to Mr. Medina, to the Ms. Womack, over and over, complaining mainly about the services that were being provided to Polish students, but she never raised any complaint that she was called a dumb Polak or that the Hispanic students were treated better or were better. Those were never made until she filed her federal suit.
So these are the complaints that she's rehearsing on page 7 and 8 or so of her brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Lauder, with respect to the First Amendment claim, are you conceding that the speech involved was protected speech?
We can concede that because she can't show that a final policymaker retaliated against her.
I understand your point on that, Richard, but you have made no point that this was protected speech.
If she were, yes, I believe it would be because she's talking about education for kids.
Even
of course,
after
it may
Garcetti?
Be. No, it's
even
not.
Even after Garcetti?
No, I'm sorry. I misspoke. It should be that this was based upon her job, and it's not based upon a public policy concern so much.
Okay, but you haven't made that argument, am I correct?
I didn't make that argument because I thought that she didn't show, and the district court found that there was no final policymaker. No other questions? I ask you to affirm the district court.
All right. I'll give you a minute, Mr. Gomberg. I think you were...
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel was incorrect. Ms. Darchuk did not refuse to teach the class. In fact, she tried to teach the class, but because the books were in Spanish and the students only spoke Spanish, she was unable to really be an effective teacher for that period of time. The processes that you discussed are confusing, but the end of the story is that the labor relations hearing officer did recommend her termination, and we believe that that is what is actionable here. And in terms of the final decision maker, the process is that the principal made the recommendation. in his deposition, Mr. Owens, the hearing officer, said he just took the principal's word for it. He didn't talk to the principal. He didn't talk to any allegedly complaining students. In fact, we weren't able to take their depositions, although we tried. And therefore, it was just a rubber stamp. The whole process is a rubber stamp in the system.
The fact that she was able to apply for other schools, that seems to me that there is a higher level of decision-making going on.
That was the decision of the hearing officer, which is, again, in our opinion, just a rubber stamp of what the principal said. But in effect, because of her disability and because of her emotional state, she was unable to teach to this day. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.